You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It's all cold down along the beach. The wind's whipping down the boardwalk. And then!
Now, the guy had an appointment this morning, so he's supposed to join us here shortly, so... The boss.
You guys all been good and practicing real hard. Yeah. Clients, you've been rehearsing real hard now. So stand and bring your new saxophone, right? Everybody out there been good or what? Oh, that's not many, you guys.
I need to go buy two more strands of Christmas lights for my tree.
Yeah, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not bow, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, he's checking it.
A couple more stories. Out of Stars and Stripes. Well, I'll tell you this. Stars and Stripes, I didn't used to read very much. I considered it a kind of a simply rubber stamp for the DOD, blah, blah, blah. Okay, what Sergeant Stars and Stripes saying? You know, speaking of him, joining us now is himself, Michael Musselman. What's going on, man?
Yeah. What's going on, man?
Nothing. How'd your appointment go?
Good. This was for a different doctor. I completely forgot about it.
Oh, really? What is it?
You know, you get so many doctors, you don't know who you're supposed to be seeing.
It must be confusing for you.
Yeah, I gotta start doing a better job.
Policing, maybe you need a personal assistant.
Yeah, probably need one of those. I've been saying that for years.
Personal assistant to tell you, okay, Mike, let's go over tomorrow's schedule, and then
I wouldn't. No, I don't want a personal assistant that tells me what my schedule is. I need a personal assistant that just says, "Hey, 15 minutes, let's go." Okay.
Well, you need like a fun, let's go have fun. Personal assistant.
A what? A fun?
Yeah, somebody who likes to go out and have fun, personal assistant, that kind of personal assistant?
My personal assistant wouldn't be a dude.
So it'd be a woman, and she'd be a fun woman?
Yeah, she'd have to take a joke. She'd have to definitely have a good sense of humor.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know. I think it sounds like it's kind of like personal assistant. I think it would. I don't know. I wouldn't want a personal assistant.
Oh, I do. Man, I would love.
I think it's like having a second wife. It sounds like a great idea when somebody's talking about it, but then in practice, not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
well, I've never had a second wife, so I would at least try it out.
You would try it out to see how that whole thing works?
Yeah, because I mean, who's had a second wife? Who can say that? Speaking from experience of having two wives.
Well, no, I mean, just hypothesizing about, you know, it sounds like a good idea, but what happens when both of them are pissed at you?
Yeah.
Exactly. Now you got two people pissed at you.
Well, no, your personal assistant would never be pissed at you. She works for you.
Wow.
Are we copping an attitude? Amber? Her name would be Amber. Regardless if...
of what her real name is?
Regardless if her name was Janice or Joyce or Carol, it would be Amber.
Amber.
So my next question is, would it bother you if I called you Amber? I know, sir. Okay. Can I ask why you would call me Amber?
No, you can't. That's not. Don't you worry about it. Just come when you're summoned.
So, yeah, the personal assistant job would kind of take on, as probably some women would say, personal servitude. But
that's not what a lot of women sign up for, though, when they want to be a personal assistant. They want to be kind of walk around in high heels and
oh, yeah, Amber can walk around in high heels.
In high heels. But in terms of personal servitude, come on, man. You got a wife.
No, I mean, like, take off my boots. Go give me a cup of coffee.
That is
personal. I mean, it's not big shit.
That's butler shit.
Yeah, but that's not, like, big-time stuff. Go give me a cup of coffee. You know the way I like it.
Well, that's personal, yeah, but you're getting there. You're getting there. Well, no, coffee's within the realm of what personal assistants
like
do.
Like, drive and go get it. Not make it for me. Drive and go get it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what they do.
Hire out. Pick up these things on the foot.
Okay, they do that too. Yeah, that's personal assistant stuff. Taking off your boots.
Drive me around. I'd sit in the back seat. Actually, I'd just lay down.
Lay down in the back seat of your pickup?
No, it would be a different car. If I had a personal assistant, it would be a different car. I'd have her drive me around like in an Audi A8. You know, the big luxury.
Tinted windows rolling around Granbury. Oh, there's the gunner.
And then she'd always have to wear something like dark sunglasses and then have one of those mic pieces in her ear.
Oh, so you could like talk into your wrist and say, we're going to execute Amber over. What would your, would you have?
What?
Nothing. I was going to say, would you have a call sign? What would your call sign be?
Mine?
Yes.
No, I just use Gunner.
Gunner?
Call me Gunner. But I'd be a great, great, great boss. Great. She would have so much fun. That would be like an ideal job for any woman that's listening right now.
Regardless of the pay. Right, you would want to have you would spend your day laughing.
The pure pleasure of hanging out with me all day long, learning what it's like to be with me.
Yeah, plus when you don't need her, right, what would you tell her to do? Hey, Amber, go take a nap. Yeah, I don't need you right now. I'm not going to need you for the next, like, 4 hours. So just go lay down someplace, do your nails, do whatever you want to do. Do some calculus.
Yeah.
I don't know what you like to do for a hobby, but whatever you do, do that.
Yeah, but you'd have to like the same things I like. Laugh at my jokes.
Now, you know, that's never an issue for me because everybody thinks my jokes are funny. So I don't really, it's like, oh, she thinks I'm funny. That's not an issue for me.
Right.
Everybody thinks I'm funny. So, yeah, so, but that is, you know what, that's how you can tell people are in love, right? She laughs at his jokes. Nobody else.
I wouldn't want Amber to love me.
How would you prevent that? Do you think that it would go that direction?
I think she'd definitely fall in love with me, though. That would be the problem.
Right? Charismatic, right? Funny, all of that.
Fun.
Mm-hmm.
Great to hang out with. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm a living, like that Dos Equis guy. I'm that in real life.
In real life. And then she goes home, right? And she has to deal with Larry, right? Larry comes rolling through the door. She's like, I've been with a
guy. No, Amber couldn't be married.
Oh, she's got to be single?
Amber could not be married.
Whoa. I think she would need...
I mean, by the time I wake up, by the time I go to bed, she's by my side.
Oh, really?
That's what my personal assistant would be.
That's what I did with J.N. Mattis. I found out his battle rhythm. Listen to this. I won't name any names, but the guy that had the job before me, at the time, the commanding general of the 1st Marine Division, he rolled into work at about 5:20 every morning. Okay.
Right.
The staff secretary would roll in at about 7:40 every morning. Okay. Let me just tell you how that worked out. It didn't. Okay. So it took me about 48 hours to kind of dial into his battle rhythm and say, okay, I'm here at 5, and I leave 5 minutes after he leaves. And he would walk in the morning and he'd look at me and he'd say, Mac, you getting enough sleep? I say, yes, sir. You sure? Yes, sir. Why? Do I act tired? No, but I get here in the morning, you're here, and I leave at night, you're here. I said, sir, that's my job. It's what I do.
Yeah. What do you want me to do?
What do you want me to do? Do it like the last bozo so you could stick your foot up my ass and wiggle your toes out my mouth? I ain't having that. So, yeah, if you're going to be a good personal assistant, got to be there. Sure. What is that saying? Showing up's 90% of it? It's not 90%, but yeah, getting there. Can you imagine that? Given J.N. Mattis a 2-hour head start on you before you got to work?
No. Oh, God. No.
You walk through the door to a tsunami. And
dude, that would be scary. That would be the scariest thing in the world.
Right, and then you're tap dancing all day, trying to tunnel out from that which you got buried by when you walked through the door. Yeah, no, you can't allow that to happen. The email, Mac, ask Gunner about your detention idea. I sent my detention idea. I don't know if he read it, but Mike, yeah, I sent it to him on Saturday when I sent it to General Furness. If I was a company commander, I would have company detention. And Sergeant Musselman could refer anybody in his squad to company detention. Me, the first sergeant, the XO, and the gunny would convene it on any given day. It would rotate. I'd stick my head in there as a company commander because I'd want to know who's in detention. No electronic devices in there. But the sergeant doesn't have to be in there. He doesn't have to ruin his day. He doesn't have to stop. And every sergeant can contribute Marines. And we're going to play fuck with them for about 3 hours and then send them home. So I mean, I don't think anything. And it's what we used to do on a regular basis, but now, you know, you can't do it anymore. So just trying to create a tool for a sergeant, a staff sergeant that they can use, to play fuck with. And the Marine Corps. And then, you know, I was just talking to Chris Woodbridge. This month's edition of the Gazette is about Artie, right? St. Barbara's Day and all that shit. So have you ever been to a St. Barbara's Day event?
Yes.
Any good? I've never been.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm surprised they still do it. I mean, it's a testament of a bunch of guys, you know, that are just a very close-knit group of artillery guys. So, because, like I said, you know, usually things like that, something happens or someone says,
right,
you know, bad things about it, and then it goes away. I mean, it's not like a tail hook or anything, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a big arty feast day. But we're trying to say that in the modern battlefield, operations will be more decentralized, greater decision-making, launching supporting arms, drones, all this shit will go down to the sergeant, staff sergeant level, but yet they can't have any kind of discretionary discipline authority in garrison. How does that one work? Answer
yeah, that,
at dog don't yeah. hunt. It doesn't work. It won't work like that.
Right.
So anyway, so it was interesting his comments on it. So anyway, I think detention's a good idea. I think it ought to be implemented, and you ought to give those guys a tool that they can swing around.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, and to me, the good things are...
people that would say, what you're doing is you're isolating him from his peers, and yada, 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 and it's like, oh. And this the stupidity that goes with, you know, what happened to his rights?
Yeah, but we know it ain't about his rights. It's about our rights. It's about him performing and being part of the team.
It's going ahead from that, though.
Right. But it can't. At some point, the ship's got to right itself, or bad things are going to happen. And I think they're already happening.
You hope. I mean, really, you hope.
Right. Right.
But I don't see it coming, man. I see the change is happening where it used to be, the saying that we say was, it's not about you, it's about us. No. Lately, what I've been seeing is it's a lot about you and not a lot about us.
That's no bueno. It has to be, it always has to be about us. But the Marine Corps is wrestling with a changing culture, and how do we not hurt anybody's feelings? You know, stuff like that.
Right.
Right. I think at some point you have to get your feelings hurt, and it only makes you a better.
Yeah.
It only makes you a better person.
Well, and like I said, all it takes is someone to complain about. I felt isolated. I felt like I was not. I was left out. I was not part one of the group, and and I didn't like that feeling. And
what's the magic?
I don't want to have that feeling again. But and people are like, oh, you poor baby.
What's the magic? What will be the magic word that gets dropped in that, Mike?
What do you mean?
You said isolated. What's the other word that will make it go away? I felt isolated, and it made me want to kill myself. It made me want to commit
suicide.
All detention operations are hereby ceased in the Marine Corps.
Or someone actually do it and then write the note.
Yep.
Captain McNamara made me feel like I was not part of the team. Dude, you'd be gone.
He kept me in detention for 3 hours, and so that's why I'm hanging myself. Okay.
That would be Exhibit A in your court.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Clown stuff. But anyway, so it's insane. And I'll tell you what, it's not a joke problem. And, we talk about it like this, but, I mean, it's a serious problem when the inmates aren't afraid to defy the people that lead their small unit. And when I say defy that, you heard Mike laugh the other day when I asked him, if you told your Marines not to touch, new joins, and you showed up, and they had been messed with, their head shaved, and what would happen? And he just laughed. He just laughed.
Yeah.
He said it would not happen. It wouldn't happen.
No.
And so we need to get back to that. We need to get back to that kind of possessiveness, that kind of, up is up and down is down, and it's kind of missing. Give me your thoughts on the passing of George Herbert Walker Bush.
We've talked about him in the past. I'd say he was a great statesman. He didn't get a lot of a good public press release. He was made fun of those, read my lips, no new taxes, and then had to raise taxes. But after he raised taxes, the budget was balanced, and we were out of the recession. It was all good, and Clinton capitalized on that.
Oh, man.
Right.
That
was all Bill Clinton.
Not really. He doesn't get the credit that he deserved for that. And that act of political, some people say it was political suicide. Others, and I think it's an interesting discussion, say that, you know what, that's really not what cost him the election. That was certainly made a lot of in the election, but what actually cost him the election was Ross Perot.
Really? You think so?
Yeah, that's what, it's interesting when you read people that say that, I mean, the people that voted for Perot were not going to vote for Bill Clinton.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
That he shaved enough of, he shaved enough off of, yeah, he got 20 million votes. Ross Perot.
Yeah, Ross Perot did?
Yeah, he got 19% of the popular vote.
Maybe it was all planned.
Clinton got 45 million votes. Bush got 39 million votes. And Ross Perot got 20 million votes. So the people that voted for Perot were as an independent, with James Stockdale as his running mate. George Bush and Dan Quayle, obviously. I think we forget about Ross Perot, in what he did. I had forgotten about it too until I saw somebody talking about it the other day. And their point was, while, you know, much was made, of Bush walking back his pledge, the person talking said, you have to understand that, he would have never, as a public servant, somebody who put the country before his party, he would have never done what is commonplace now and say, burn it down. I'm not doing it. We won't have a budget. He wouldn't do that. He would compromise because that's what we did. That's what we did back then. And then they went on to make the subsequent point. They said, but truth be told, you know, Ross Perot's candidacy was aimed at the Republicans because he was pissed. So, and I don't know enough about Ross Perot and his candidacy and all that to comment on it, but pretty interesting stuff. But no.
Yeah, that's something I, you know, like I said, I never thought about that, but.
Yeah, I didn't realize he got that much of the vote. He got 18.9% of the popular vote. Electoral votes, he got none, so he didn't win any states. Clinton carries 32 states, Bush 18. And then I'd be curious to know where the majority of Ross Perot's votes came from and what that would have done to the electoral contest, had he not been around. So,
right.
Interesting. The all right. What else is going on? What'd you do over the weekend? Anything? You got your Christmas tree up? You put your lights up? You got all your? Are you guys big?
Yeah, lights are up. We're not having a tree this year because we're not gonna be here. So,
really, where are you going for Christmas?
Colorado. We're gonna be in Colorado.
Well, who's in Colorado?
No one.
Oh, you're just going to Colorado.
That's why we're going there.
There you go. You can go there to smoke a little pot?
No. I can't do that.
You can't?
No.
Not even under for it's legal there for medicinal purposes, man.
No, I it's not for me, man. I don't like smoke unless it's a nice cigar with a thing of bourbon.
I don't even like that. I hate smoke. One of the reasons I never smoke, and marijuana smoke, it's nasty. So one of the reasons that I never was big on it. I was not. You know, this is interesting. I remember reading when I was in probably elementary school that a guy who was a coach for the Oakland A's, maybe it was probably after my dad got fired, so it was probably, yeah, I could have been still in grammar school, but I'd been in 7th, 8th grade.
Right.
But Jerry, a guy named Jerry Adair, who played for the Chicago White Sox, his daughter got caught with drugs, and let's see. And it got in a newspaper, blah, 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 blah. And I remember thinking, whoa. I remember, holy shit, man. If I do stupid stuff, I mean, you know, would that get in the paper? Because my dad's like, you know, in baseball. And I thought that's not very cool, you know. And it had a, you know, and again, not that I really was inclined to do drugs or anything like that, because I wasn't. But I never forgot that. Like, you know, and I thought, you know, my parents are pretty cool. I live a pretty cool life. I don't, like, why would I inflict that on my parents? I mean, it just seems stupid to me. So I never did your, and my friends weren't big into it. One of my best friends got into cocaine, and he wound up robbing banks and going to federal prison. And he got out, and I remember him calling me, and well, I was home once to see my mom when she still lived in Sacramento, and he said, hey, man, can I come over, and we'll hang out? I said, I can't hang out with you. He said, what do you mean? I said, you're a convicted felon. I've got a security clearance. I can't do that. He goes, are you serious? I said, yeah. I said, I can't do it.
He was butthurt over you being truthful like that?
Yeah, he was shocked. He was shocked that, you know, that I couldn't do that.
Well, then, you know, that's that old saying that good friends never put friends in those type of situations.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just, I don't know, man. That's crazy.
You know what he told me? He got out of he went back to prison again. And then, and then I saw him at an event, and I asked him, I said, well, what are you going to do with your life? And he said, you know, you can be a truck driver, you know, with a record and blah, 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 blah. And, I said, well, can you stay away from drugs? He said, it's hard. I said, well, wait a minute. And this is how stupid I am. Okay. This will give everybody listening some idea of what a cherry boy I am in parts of my life. I'm like, yeah, but you've been in jail for like 5 years, man. So didn't you get away from drugs while you were in there? And he started laughing. He said, no. He said, Mike, it's easier to get drugs in prison than it is outside of prison.
Right.
I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, it's a big business. Everybody in on it. I said, whoa. He said, yeah, to be honest, I came out with a worse drug problem than I went in with. He said, sorry.
Yeah, that's just crazy. I mean, he's right, though. I mean, yeah, there's a big drug problem in prison, and it's pretty easy to get, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So, you know, I think we all have this image of what prison is. And I mean, there's just an article in Navy Times that almost – military members have had almost $500,000 extorted from them. It was like 443 service members each paid about $1,200 in this scam. You and I are in prison. We open up identities on dating sites. And then, post a picture of some hot girl. We look for military guys. They strike up a conversation. The guy in prison sends nude pictures of the same girl, you know, wherever he would get them. And then his cellmate sends a message to the guy saying that I'm her father. She's a minor. I'm going to turn you in, to your command. And, whatever with a minor.
Oh, yeah.
Child pornography. Yeah, child pornography, blah, 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 blah. Right? He shits his pants, and the guy says, hey, look, I need you to wire me $1,200 so I can get her a new phone, and this shit's going to be done. They did that to between 400 and 500 service members to the tune of $500,000. In your prison.
That is freaking crazy.
In your prisons. Hello. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Do they have every right in the world, too? I guess so.
they, Mac, they're not supposed to be there. Come on, it's that whole.
They're victims?
You know. But, yeah, because they didn't have the same opportunities that you and I did.
I know.
No, but they didn't have, they may have not had the same opportunities, but you know what? They had the same decision making. They didn't have to make those types of decisions.
Now, let me ask you this. If you grew up in the inner, if you grew up in, well, let's just say you grew up in Logan Heights, where your grandma, uh-huh. where your grandma lived, right?
No, she lived, well, she lived in Chula Vista, but yeah.
Okay. If you, oh. right, I mean, so would you, you would have been part of a gang, yes?
Oh, dude, don't get me started. Those guys that, that I knew that I mean, that I grew up with, I think one of them went, well, he might be still in prison today for a murder. So, yeah. They were the founding fathers of the Gamma Shoutown.
Tell everybody what those guys are.
They're, well, I don't know what they are now, but back then they were a huge, the one and only, you know, Mexican type gang. And so, yeah, it was a really tough place to be back then. And, it, you know, they were, it's crazy because you think about it, they start off as childhood friends and they're just guys that you play kickball with or soccer. We used to play soccer all the time or baseball, you know. And then you start seeing this, but and it comes down to is their argument was not the same opportunity. And you're right. Maybe not the same opportunity, but the same opportunity not to make the wrong decisions. So, yes. You can't tell me, well, I had to rob that liquor store. I had to shoot that guy. You know, he was dissing me, man. I had to put a cap on him. So, I don't know. It's, I'm not really one that's really sorry for those, that type of lifestyle. You can make something up. Now, granted, there were guys that actually, you know, grew up and they made something stuff. They got to be very successful in business. But that wasn't the norm and that wasn't what was really expected. And society kind of accepted that fact. And with, you know, oh, poor thing, you never had the same opportunity.
You know, my staff sergeant, my watch chief in Fallujah in 2006, he went to Garfield High School in East Los Angeles, and both his brothers had gone to prison, and he tells us he's raised by his grandma, and he tells this story about he was like the star tailback when he was a senior, I think, and for their football team, and he said, but you know, and you know, for us white people, most of us don't know that in the inner city, the blacks and the Hispanics do not get along. Okay, we don't really know that. So he's talking about how it would be on if they saw me walking home from school, they'd chase me in cars. I'd get shot at, and you know, just to get home. And so he said one day, these guys chased me in a car, and they chased me into an abandoned house. And I'm fighting three guys. I knock one guy down, and Stetson Sanchez, he's a big, thick dude, okay? And so he said some of his friends went and got his brothers. His brother had been out of prison for about a month, and so his brother gets there and with his friends, and they just like blast the shit out of these other three guys. And so the guy who was the ringleader, his brother looks at him, and he says, hey, kick his teeth out. And he looks at his brother, he goes, now, I can't have my brother think I'm a bitch, right? So he looks at me, he says, kick all of his teeth out. And he said, man, I don't want to do that. And he said, all right. So he takes his arm, and he said, my brother put the dude's arm, his upper arm, over his steel-toed boot, and he said, stomp his arm and break it. He said, so I did that. So I didn't have to kick his teeth in. And he said, we went home, and my brother told me, you got to lift more, because when you go to the joint, you can't be nobody's girl, man. You got to be a tough guy. All right? And so I said, when? He said, yeah. It wasn't like if I was going to go to the joint. It was when I went to the joint. And that's what he was preparing me for. And so what he had to do, he had to fight his way out of his gang, which meant that they all lined up one night. If he wanted out, he had to fight every person. And he said, I was bigger than most of them, so I could do it. And he said, that's how I got out of my gang. I joined the Marine Corps. And I mean, he gets his girlfriend pregnant when she's 16 and he's 18. They're still married. I said, dude, do you know what percentage of people you are in life that come from that? I said, you're in the 0%. Married to the same woman, right? Retired as a Marine. I said, that's an incredible story. And now he's working for the LAPD. But you hear these stories, like sitting around talking with Marines, and they start telling you their life story, and you're like, holy shit, man. But you're right. I mean, and that's the culture. When you go to the joint. Not if, when. So,
it's when.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. The here's an email. So Christmas in Colorado, does that mean you pack everything up and go? Does that mean you rent a place since you don't have family there? What does this mean? I'm a bit concerned. I'm not sure if I like this idea.
Oh. Yeah, renting a house.
Are you a skier?
I used to be.
Are you?
But the answer to your question, no, because I don't need that in my life now. I don't need to screw up, fall my ass. You know, it's not like you're 25 and you can ski and then take a good spill and, you know, like, sit by the fire and go, ooh, man, that hurt.
That hurt a little bit. Then,
yeah. That happens now. That could be death. You know, so I'm not willing to risk that one, man. You can have that.
Yeah, you know what? I've seen a few things in the last week, and Mike and I talked about one last week. People that don't have respect for their own physical limitations, whether it be, I want to go paragliding and the guy doesn't strap you in, or whatever other, you know, death-defying act, like, I want to live. I'm like, really? Then why are you doing that if you want to live? Because some of that stuff's like straight up crazy. So I don't, I'm not big on that kind of stuff. Bungee jumping? No, that's all right. I'll stand here and watch. Oh, Mac, you're a pussy. Yeah, I am. I'm respectful of things that can get you dead. And so I choose not to do them. Oh, I want to live. Okay, then have at it. But don't try to shame me, okay? Don't victim shame me.
Right.
Don't victim shame me. The another email. We're going to do any hunting while he's up there?
No. No, that's just a place. I want to go up there and just relax and just take walk in mountains, you know, go in the snow, take that long walk in the woods.
Where are you going? What city?
Just outside of Denver. I'm not going to say it because I don't want people stopping in.
You don't want this? All of a sudden, all these people showing up at your place in Denver? Hey, where's...
I got a fan base, man.
Where's Gunner? That dude? Yeah, he just showed up. He's in that house over there. The one
with, I don't want that word to get out, brother.
The one with all the people around it. All right, Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, all the agencies come.
Exactly.
And they
Then everybody's pissed.
Don't
at you.
Deal with it.
Everybody's pissed at you because all the news trucks are on the street and all that shit.
Right. Hey, are you going to go to Birmingham?
I just got the invitation yesterday, so I gotta check that out.
Oh, shoot, I told him not to invite you.
I wondered why you got yours before I got mine.
Right, I told him to hold off on yours.
That you hadn't approved it yet?
Yeah.
There's a wedding. I got invited to two weddings this last week. That's odd. I don't really get, unlike Mike, I don't get invited to a lot of weddings.
Oh, I do.
I know. You seem like you're going to weddings all the time.
Yeah, we had a wedding this weekend.
How was it? What makes a good wedding? Can you tell if it's going to be a good wedding when you walk in or what?
I told you there is no such thing as a good wedding. There's always a good funeral.
You know what? I am starting to enjoy funerals because that's where I see my friends. This sounds like something somebody really old would say. And, so I'm becoming that person, but, yeah, I go to funerals and I have a great time. I mean, I feel bad that somebody's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I see my friends, I laugh, I hang out, I have a great time. And like, I clear the rest of the day and the evening when I go to a funeral. Cause, normally going to be a pretty good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like I said, good weddings are just, you know, going to be a fun time. Just nothing special. This is going to, the looks of it, this one's going to be a good one. At a museum, some of the best weddings I've ever been to were held at like a museum.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. My younger sister, when she got married, it was at the Science Museum there on the river in Minneapolis. You know, that's the one they converted into like an old, from an old plant of some sort that used to be on the river. Super cool, man. Great time.
You know, yeah, Minnesota's got some, Minneapolis and St. Paul have some really cool stuff down by the river. When I flew out of there, you know, I drove through Fort Snelling and the old stuff is Fort Snelling built like 1860, you know, designed to defend Minneapolis, blah, 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 blah. Should it ever be attacked up the Mississippi River? So it's got some really old, cool historical buildings. But if you go down into St. Paul, you have these huge old warehouses that they've renovated and done some really cool things with. St. Paul, pretty cool town if you've never been to Minneapolis, St. Paul, to go hang out in and see some of the cool stuff that's down there. And they have these beautiful old homes there, you know, that these millionaires from Mississippi River wealth and shit built there. Oh, my God. They're absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. Somebody sent me this about the MyPillow guy. His name's John Lindell.
This is in Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah. Born in Mankato, raised in Chaska and Carver, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Launched another.
Chaska is right by where I used to live.
Chaska is?
Yeah.
Right.
Chaska, Eden Prairie, Shakopee, Chanhassen.
There you have it.
They're a good hockey team.
And they're all a lot better now than they were then. A lot more people there. He operated a number of small businesses, including a carpet cleaning, lunch wagon, a few bars and restaurants. He had been plagued with addictions, including cocaine, crack cocaine, alcohol addiction. His cocaine addiction starting in 1982, his crack cocaine addiction starting in the 90s, his addictions even stretched through the early years of his MyPillow business. Due to these addictions, he lost his 20-year marriage, his house, and nearly lost the MyPillow business. On January 16, 2009, Lindell, through prayer, quit all of his addictions and has been clean and sober ever since.
Good for him. Huh?
Yeah, pretty amazing story. And again, that came up, somebody sent me that because I made the comment of, you don't see too many people wearing a cross doing commercials these days, and he's one of them.
No, good for him.
Yeah. I mean, you know what's cool is doing it his way. That's his way, and I hope something like that doesn't put people off. But I think it's really cool that he has the courage of his convictions and to do that stuff.
Right.
Let's see, what else is going on? Mother Eve.
Oh, you tell me.
Mac is Gunner close to Houston? Will he go and either pay his respects to President Bush or will he attempt to be there? He's not close to Houston, so.
I'm not even near Houston.
Yeah, Houston's a ways away, so. I think the answer to that is no. Here's another one. I know that both you guys are monitors of sports and have friends that like Ohio State. Their head coach stepping down today. What do you think?
You know, I don't like kicking my buddies when they're down, but we're not talking about just any old buddies. So, yeah, I would love. That's a good thing.
He stepped down this morning. And so they've already announced a replacement. He's going to do a press conference, I think, pretty soon. I think 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock Eastern time. And he had a tough year, man. That domestic violence, his wife stuff that happened, that he was suspended for, and probably for him, the worst part was that his wife was implicated in that. She got drugged into it. She was sent pictures of this woman. She said she did not show them to her husband. And then nobody believed that, and she was dragged through the streets being called a liar. And then and he has his own health issues. He has some kind of brain tumor. That he deals with. So, he's still a relatively young guy, so I'd be surprised if he didn't come back at some point in the future. One of only two people that has won national championships at two different universities. So, and he makes pretty good money. So, yeah. But our Ohio State friends, very, very concerned today about the future of the program. Very concerned. And we always root for things that make their lives more turbulent as sports fans. I root for that. It's always fun to have a conversation with them because they're very, to say enthusiastic fans would not do them justice. Not do them justice. The,
what's that? You there?
No, I'm not here.
Okay.
Hey, Mike, what do you make of the head of the Fifth Fleet committing suicide?
It can happen to anyone, baby.
Yeah, no kidding, man.
You know, I was talking to someone about that. That came up, and then we were talking about suicide. And, you know, it's interesting to me, again, that how many people are just so naive about suicide or, like, potential suicide, you know, and it comes down to, you know what all suicide has in common?
What?
A trigger. There's got to be a trigger. All of that, like you said, all that pent up, and then something releases all of that. And but the trigger, and it's exaggerated, sometimes exaggerated by alcohol or drugs or things like that, or it lets your ambition, your control of your own body, and you know it allows for that stuff to happen, but it's got to be a trigger. That's what that is. And so when you look at this admiral, what's the trigger?
The two most prominent triggers are financial and relationship. Those are the most common triggers. Now, I mean, financial, you would think a guy who's making that kind of money.
Well, in those positions, you know what else is prevalent in those kind of positions is image. You know, those guys, he's a three-star admiral?
He's a three-star.
Image is a big deal in his life. You know, the way he perceives his future, his legacy, which I hate that word, but those guys in those positions, they talk about that. They're like, what will be my legacy? Oh, it's about you now? Okay. But
I'll tell you what, my first reaction was something to make a guy like that. I mean, you read his biography, right? And he's top dog everywhere he goes. It is, right? The Navy is at war in one COCOM, and that is CENTCOM. He's the highest-ranking United States naval officer in CENTCOM. He's the head of Fifth Fleet. He's that guy, right? And so that's a big deal. And you read his biography, and he's in the midst of all that stuff, and all of a sudden he kills himself. What can make him do that? And if you say, well, it's not money, because, you know, he could walk out of the door tomorrow and get a job that pays him multi-million dollars, or substantial money on an annual basis, what could make him do that? And so, you know, to me, his honor would be right up there near the top. Has he been compromised in some way, shape, or form by something? And you just, but nobody has said anything, so I guess we'll wait. Maybe was it a relationship issue? Was it with his wife, with somebody else? And so, I don't know. What could be...
Well, this, what can that becomes him, his ego and everything else, the way he's going to be perceived.
Right.
You know?
Right, and that he decided... Do you remember the case of Admiral Borda?
Yeah, over a medal.
Over medals.
Because he knew that he'd be forever known as that.
Yeah, the whole...
there's no escaping that.
Yeah, I just remember that happened. He was the CNO. Right? Borda is notable for being the first American sailor to have risen through the enlisted ranks to become the chief of naval operations. That's, and, you know, and he committed suicide. He wrote a note, in the note.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. When you think of what he did.
In the letter to sailors, he wrote how he cared about the core values of the Navy, honor, courage, and commitment, and about how he would be viewed. He tells sailors that they are doing a good job. Don't let people get you down. You're a good Navy. There are times when they have to take care of other sailors, take care of themselves. It was vintage Mike Borda.
Right.
And, you know, and again, it, as Mike said, it was about, you know, decorations, right?
Right.
On a Thursday afternoon, hours after he learned that Newsweek magazine was reporting in an article suggesting that he was not entitled to two Vietnam War combat decorations that he had worn until about a year ago, the admiral who had quit high school, ran away from home, lied about his age to join the Navy, was 56 years of age, although Navy records actually listed him as 57, he took his own life. So, yeah, I mean, and you heard that, you're like, are you kidding me?
Is this Borda you're talking about, the new guy?
Yeah, Borda. Navy officials said Borda had removed the combat V devices about a year prior to the article. After the National Security News Service, a military research group that has worked with Newsweek, filed a Freedom of Information Act request for copies of the citation supporting the decorations. And then everybody said, hey, look, if you made a mistake, you made a mistake. But, again, I think it goes back to what you said, Mike. What did he think? Did he know? And if he knew that he didn't raid him and he wore him, no matter what people said about, yeah, we'd understand it, he knows the truth.
Right.
And if he couldn't live with it, then, well. So, yeah, that's what I thought. When I heard he, it was Saturday, and I was kind of getting Christmas stuff ready to put up on the outside of the house. Patrick and I, he was here. Actually, there was football games on. And so I saw that news, and I said, holy shit. And it said he had died. And I said, I wonder if he committed suicide. And Patrick looked at me and he said, that guy? And I said, yeah. And then an hour later, well, I think it was the first report of that he had committed suicide. And, I mean, we both had the same reaction. I think, like, everybody has, like, holy shit. And then the next question.
Yeah, that guy completely suicide.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, why would he do that? So, anyhow. All right, man, what else you got going on today?
That's about it.
Oh, hold on. How did the land nav class go?
Oh, that went great. I was ridiculed of being like the class level, it was too high. My
what I thought they were going to be at. I was told, next time, pretend like we're a bunch of fourth graders. So.
Did they enjoy
it? It was good, though.
Did they enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because we're going to do a couple more after, but I just dumped everything on them. We talked about it. Yeah, I told them how to read Latin long. So we talked about longitude, latitude, prime meridian, how the Earth is broken up into four different hemispheres, and then, you know, how to determine, you know, the whole thing about Latin long, you know. So, you know, we were talking, it's funny, I said, you know, one degree of latitude and longitude is 111 kilometers or 69 miles. So you can basically do the math and know that, and do determinations on how that works out and how far things are from the equator. And, so, you know, how those things work. And as we were going through that stuff, you should have seen them. And I looked up and I saw their faces. And I was like,
oops.
So, a little lower on the pole. And, you know, and they're like, yeah, look off the ground. But then we transitioned into how to read a map, what's on a map, the colors on a map, contour lines, you know, basically map stuff. We hit it. Then we hit, let's see, what do we do next? And then we talked about compass, different compasses, the bezel ring or, just how to set azimuths, how to do back azimuths. I mean, it was a big thing. We covered a lot. But it was just like wave top of everything out there. We talked about celestial navigation. We talked about, you know, using the stars, using the sun, the angles of the sun, you know, the shadow tip method ones, you know, that kind of, just everything. Everything introduction to land navigation. So now they're like, boom, you know, they're on it. Now this is like, it's new. It's something enticing, something new. It gets them focused on something. And, but yeah, at the end, man, it was so funny because the faces were like, oh, my goodness. And then, like I told him, I said, see, now you know how hard it is to be me. This is all the, this is like, this is stuff that's in my head all the time.
Did they go for it? Or did they just look at you and go, whatever, bro?
Yeah, they wouldn't feel sorry for me. You know.
Let me tell you, teaching land navigation to people that don't know, and I was one of them. I didn't know anything about it. I'd never navigated in my life. You know, I mean, I knew north, south, east, and west, and I was interested. But, man, they showed me that topographical map of Quantico that looks like,
right.
It looks like if you stare into the bowl of your pasta, of your the pan after you boil pasta and drain all the water out of it, if you stare into that, that's what Quantico looks like. I don't even know, like, what is that? And all of a sudden, somebody begins to teach you, and you begin to say, oh, the little circles are hilltops, and the blue stuff is low ground, water. Oh, and it's like magic, it comes alive. So, anyway, that's fun.
Yeah, I gave them a lot. So, they probably got more than an Eagle Scout got.
It's overwhelming, though. The first time somebody teaches you, you just sit there and your eyes gloss over and roll back in your head. Wait, true north, grid north? Like, what are those? What's the difference?
North?
Yeah.
Declination, and then, yeah. But yeah. We explain to them. You know where magnetic north points to? And they're like, I said, Baffin Island, Canada. And the reason why is Baffin Island is the, you know, largest iron ore deposits in the world. And, you know, good, simple. True north, of course, points to the pole because that's where the prime meridian and, you know, and 90 degrees meet. But, you know, and I gave them examples, like, you know, how do you always remember
people always ask me, like, how do you always remember where longitude and latitude? You know, what lines are which? Right?
Right.
So, like I tell them, okay, so if the equator, is zero, and then numbers go up from there. So you that line, first line is 10 degrees, 20 right. degrees, 30 degrees, 40 degrees, all the way to 90.
Right.
And then the same from the south. From there it goes 10 degrees, 20 degrees, 30 degrees, 30, 40 degrees. But then when it goes east and west in the vertical,
right.
it goes from that to 180. So the numbers are longer going east to west. So that is your longitude. And they're like, oh, my God, that's great.
But who uses lat long, though? Nobody.
I mean, a lot of people do. I mean,
who does? Come on.
Tell me what. A lot of civilians do. They don't use military grade reference system, MGRS.
You know what? You have to pay to get that light put on your Google Earth. There's an overlay that you can buy that puts MGRS on your map. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. And then, so we also talked about Universal Transverse Mercator, UTM, and how that came about and how it was invented. And then it's the measurement in meters from, so you'll see on the map it says 4,555,000. Well, that's in meters. So, you know, the measurement. And so it's really interesting to see them kind of get this, you know, and figure this out. But we just hit on it, just about everything. And then from there, we're going to, then we'll go further and further down each little rabbit hole.
All right. So this is going to be a week. So now you've got to have a final exam, a practical app.
Oh, I will. I'll have final exams the whole time.
Nice.
So I gave some tests out of the United States, and they have, like, Denver, Colorado on there. Or I put San Diego, California, and I put, Bismarck, North Dakota. Or is it South Dakota? Where's Bismarck?
Bismarck is North Dakota, the south central part of North Dakota. Not too far from the South Dakota border.
Yeah, so I put a lot of that stuff in there. I put Granbury, Texas. And then would tell them, okay, tell me the lat long, not the degrees in minutes, or the degrees in minutes and seconds, because that, we're not there yet. And they don't have a tool to measure that anyway. So
right.
they said, give me roughly the lat long of these cities. And they're picking up real quick. They're like, oh, it's simple, okay.
Like that. Learning occurs. There you go. Map reading. Life skill.
Yeah, so again, then it gives you an estimate of, like, you know, Washington, D.C. is at the 37th, it's at the 37th parallel.
Yes.
On latitude.
Yeah.
And so if you do 37 times 69, which is what? I don't have my calculator with me.
37 times what?
69.
Hold on. I'll do it for you. 37 times 69 equals 2,553.
That's how far it is away from the equator.
Like, I don't care. Like, do I care about that?
I do. I care about everything. All that information in my head.
And that's what drives you crazy.
Yeah.
When your brain gets sensitive... when your brain gets sensitive, that's what's happening.
Yeah, all that stuff pops into my head.
Yeah. Yeah, Bob Nielsen thinks you have the beginning of TBI epilepsy. He listens to you.
TBI what?
Epilepsy.
Yeah?
Yeah. He listens, and then he sends me messages. Hey, Mac. Gunner's got the beginning symptoms of TBI epilepsy. Tell him. I'm like, okay, I'll tell him. I'm like, why don't you tell him? He scares me. I'm like, really? Come on, man. Like,
he's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, just tell him. so But I'll send you a link. He sent me to an article. It's pretty interesting. I'm going to have somebody on to talk about it. Do you remember, Bob talks about him, but Pat Horan, gunshot army officer, prior enlisted army officer, gunshot wounded ahead in the area of Mosul. He deals with TBI epilepsy. And so he and his wife.
Are they seizures?
Well, not in the way that we would, like, define seizures. Okay? So I think that we think when we say seizure, we think foaming of the mouth, blah, 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 blah. And he said no.
Yeah, arms twisted.
Yeah, he said no, it's not like this. It's other symptoms. And it starts out with other symptoms. So I said, oh, okay. Yeah, I'd be interested. So I will pass on the link that he sent me, and you can take a look at it. But I was reading, and it's a common symptom of life with a traumatic brain injury. So
right.
Something that you should probably it may or may not apply. So I don't really know. I'm not there yet. But I'm gonna have him on the phone, the guy who wrote this article in the New York Times on, and then I'm gonna have Pat and Patty Horan on. Pat, who had the gunshot wound, his wife Patty is the one that scripted his. There is every injury.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I knew that one.
Right. Every brain injury different. She scripted his training and saved his life. And so his not right. his training, but his what am I? His
physical rehabilitation.
Yeah. Everything post op after they got everything to be stopped. Now what do we do?
Right.
Is there any opportunity that he can live a normal life? Well, you know, you depend on surgeons will tell you, well, probably not. And she was like not having it. No. And so she flew around the country and found out where to take her husband. And a lot of women did this. And organizations like Semper Fi Fund funded it and things like that. I mean, not Patty's, but different women. You know, where do I get the money to find out what my husband needs and to go talk to these doctors? How do I do it? And
right. That's
why Semper Fi Fund is such a cool organization. And so anyway. All right, man, I will let you go. Thank you very much.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right, talk to you on Thursday. That is the one and only Gunner Mike Musselman. All right, we're going to take a 60-second break. We will be right back. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members facing...
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. that'll do it on a Tuesday. We're supposed to have Ben Lunick on tomorrow. Ben is a former Marine with 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines in Ramadi, where he lost a leg. But he's got other stuff going on. Actually, he's got a doctor's appointment, so he can't get out of it. Anyway, we'll roll it right for a week. So we'll come up with something tomorrow. Anyway, if you're just tuning in, talk about the news of the day. And then Francois Macron. France. Think the Russians were involved in that at all? I wouldn't put it past them. Next one is, let's see, what else? Oh, breaking news, but the head of the CIA briefed, I guess, senators today. And I don't know what the forum was, if all the Senate got briefed or whatnot, but she was up on Capitol Hill doing that. So you'll see that. Headlines already starting to boom around about what she had to say and then their characterization of what she said. So, anywho, so you'll see that today. Chris Woodbridge came on to talk about intermediate level discipline in the Marine Corps. So we have an interesting discussion about that. He's actually more pessimistic than I am about it. So, and then we talk about the December issue of the Marine Corps Gazette, which is devoted to fires. That's right, as in the King of Battle Artillery. St. Barbara's Day. So, anyhow, you'll hear that, and then you'll hear the gunner. So, happy Tuesday to you. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everybody out there. On a Tuesday, All Marine Radio, over and out.